Are You Just Watching is supported by your dearly loved listeners. Special thanks to Craig Hardy, Tim Martin, Richard French, and Stephen Brown II for their monthly support. To help support Are You Just Watching, please go to patreon.com/areyoujustwatching. Show notes for this episode can be found at areyoujustwatching.com/66. Are You Just Watching? Episode 66, Sully. Welcome to the podcast that shares critical thinking for the entertained Christian. I'm E. Franklin.
I'm Tim Martin.
And this was, you know, one of those movies we just pulled out of last year's movies. Did it come out? No, it came out. Did it come out last
year?
Yeah,
it's 2016 or it's labeled 2016 on IMDb.
Yes. So it came out last year and we waited till it came out on DVD to talk about it. It was one I think missed in the theaters. It was probably came out at a time when I was too busy to go see movies. but it's a historical a movie about an incident probably everybody remembers, anybody in the United States anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to get kind of branch away from our sci-fi dependence and hit a different genre. So it was a good movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed it, and you know, it's nice to have a movie about something that happened not only in our lifetimes but recently in our lifetimes. So mm-hmm. we have personal experience that we can tie it to.
Right, right. You know that we kind of remembered seeing it. We met in the news, and who didn't?
Yeah, no kidding.
Right. But before we dive into the discussion, I do want to let everybody know, in case you don't listen all the way to the end of our episodes, that we have created a discussion group in Facebook, and you can find it just by looking for Are You Just Watching and looking for a group instead of a page. Our page is still there, but the group is something you can join, and it will be private so that you can, you know, post and chat and talk, and it won't be out there for the public to see. And we're hoping that everybody who listens to our podcast will join the group so that we can start some really interesting discussions and get some feedback from you on any changes that we need to make with how we do the podcast.
Yeah, we do have 6 members on the group already. That's nice.
So, yeah, we'd love, and you can interact personally with Tim and I because we're both going to be in the group, and we would love to get some discussions going in there regarding movies, commercials, TV shows, anything that people watch. Just some good in-depth Christian worldview discussions going on there.
Absolutely.
So, please join us. And if you can't find us, just go to our areyoujustwatching.com and for the show notes for this episode, which will be at areyoujustwatching.com/66, and go all the way to the bottom and we'll have a link to the discussion down there. So, all right. Now, about Sully. This movie... It was interesting because I built myself up before I watched it. I didn't see it in the theaters. I watched it on DVD, and I went on YouTube and I found a ton of documentaries about the actual Miracle on Hudson, you know, quote unquote, Miracle on mm-hmm. Hudson, crash and or landing, however you want to call it, and watched a bunch of documentaries. So by the time I watched the movie, I was very well aware of the way everything panned out. Because I had watched all the documentaries. And
now, I find that interesting because I actually avoided watching any of the real life stuff until after I saw the movie because I wanted mm-hmm. to get the sense, I guess, of mm-hmm. What the director, what Eastwood mm-hmm. was trying to portray in the movie before I let it get contaminated by the truth.
Contaminated by the truth. That's funny.
It's my new tagline, contaminated by the truth. But I watched the movie and then I watched the special features.
Mm-hmm. On the DVD. Yeah. Yeah, there were some good ones on there. If you got the Blu-ray has extras. The DVD does not. And I was amazed. At least the DVD I had didn't have anything on it. I don't know that there aren't any DVDs out there that don't have extras. But my Blu-ray had extras. My DVD did not. I had got the combo. But yeah, there was some really cool stuff on there. And there's, I mean, free for the taking. There's a just a whole bunch of stuff on YouTube. I was pretty amazed at how many documentaries have been done about that, which it makes total sense that mm-hmm. they would. One of the things that I really appreciated about the movie was because everybody knows what happened. I mean, if you, unless you live under a rock, there's no way you don't know the story about this airline pilot who landed his airline on the Hudson River and everybody got out alive.
Yeah, it's normally when we do a DVD, we don't worry about a spoiler section. But in this case, there really is no spoilers that we yeah. can't not do.
Right, right. I mean, the movie was already spoiled before you went in because yeah. you already knew what happened. So they play off of that at the beginning of the movie because the movie starts with them taking off, mm-hmm. hitting the birds, and then trying to get back to the airport, which is not what really happened.
Yeah. I was a little thrown. I didn't expect that. It was sort of like a cold opening type thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then it turns out that it's his nightmare, and you're in the day after basically it happened. And I appreciate that because it played off the expectations of the viewer when they knew what they were going to see. The movie Sully was they knew what it was about. They knew what happened. So to start the movie with this is the way it could have happened, you know, how it could have all gone wrong.
Yeah.
Really played off the expectations.
In the extra features on the Blu-ray, did you say you got to watch those?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
Didn't they say that Eastwood read the book and then they sat down to talk about how to make it in a movie and then they decided to make the movie about what was beyond the book?
Mm-hmm. I don't remember that per se, but I do know that they sat down and realized that they couldn't just make the movie about the actual incident. For one thing, it only took 208 seconds, you know, from the bird hit to them landing on the water.
Mm-hmm.
It would be a very short movie. You add that to the 24 minutes that it took for them to get everybody rescued after the plane landed on the water. So you're talking about, you know, what, 27 minutes total from the bird hit to when they picked the last person up out of the water. You know, it would have been a very short movie.
It's sort of like a commercial.
Yeah. Well, you know, the interesting thing about it is that they actually show it, the whole extent of the 208 seconds. They actually show that twice in the movie, all mm-hmm. from one end to the other. On my third viewing of the movie, that's the one nice thing about going through a DVD is that we can watch it over and over and over again. I actually timed it, clocked it off of the clock on the DVR or the DVD player to see how long it took for them to show the sequence of events. And it was 120 seconds longer the second time through. So it was 328 seconds, I think.
Well, the second time through, they actually showed additional dialogue between Sully and Skiles, right?
No, it was uninterrupted. But what they were showing, I think that added the extra time to it was they were showing what happened in the cockpit and they were showing what happened in the
air traffic controller.
With the air traffic controller. And I think that added extra seconds because they were going back and forth between them. But it still felt fast. The first time I went, when I first watched the movie, the very first time, I just sat down and watched it for enjoyment, and it felt fast. I mean, from the moment that the birds hit to they were landing in the water, it felt fast. And I'm like, how on earth can you wrap your mind around how quickly they had to make those decisions? And it really is pretty cool to think about it.
Yeah,
that his experience as a pilot got him down on into the water safely.
Him and everyone else on the plane.
Yeah, exactly. And we're going to go into detail about that later on in our discussion. But I do want to mention that the music, unlike most movies, this was not composed.
Michael! I miss Michael.
This was a collaboration of Clint Eastwood, Christian Jacob, and the Turney Sutton Band. I think I'm saying that right. And it was kind of jazzy, like a soft jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't really impress on you as there. I mean, it was more just like the undercurrent of music going throughout the movie.
Yeah.
There was nothing spectacular about it, and I will play just a little bit of it here so you can hear what we're talking about. Setting music, it's nothing spectacular, but it worked.
Yeah, I want to say that it was more than a lot of the movies we see. I think it was like stealth mode setting the mood,
right?
As opposed to like Rogue One, where the movie was mood setting, but it was also much closer to being front and center and part of the experience.
Right. Right. And, it will not go down as one of my favorite scores, but it definitely, it worked. It set the mood and it worked, but that's about the best I can say for it. Mm. Not my style of music. But the movie script, and I think it was sort of a collaboration too, but Clint Eastwood, I think, was really hands-on in what he wanted shown in the movie. And I think the other thing that was really spectacular about the script was that they allowed Captain Sully to read the script and to be involved in decision making about what was going to be shown and everything. I think having him involved on that level really helped the movie stay factual.
Yeah. Yeah. In my notes, I even put one or two places. I wonder if this is how it really happened. Mm-hmm. And you pointed out that everything in the movie is how it really happened.
Mm-hmm.
And this has got to be the first movie that we've seen that, is completely, totally, and utterly factual.
Yes, they didn't really add anything for drama. And it was very interesting. I watched, it may have been the one on the DVD, they all get mixed up in my mind now, but one of the featurettes I watched said that the actors, obviously, we know Tom Hanks was Sully, but the two actors that played Sully and the first officer, the co-pilot.
Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah. They like actually...
Skiles.
Yeah. They actually put them in a simulator, a flight simulator, and let them fly that entire instance of, from the bird strike to landing on the Hudson River so that they could feel what it really felt like. And one of the things that Tom Hanks said was that it was interesting because he got to learn what all of the buttons and switches did so that when he was acting it out in the open set, because they weren't really in a cockpit when they acted it out, they were in an open set,
right.
That he knew what each button or switch was supposed to do so that he was knowledgeably doing it so that an actual pilot watching the movie would go, yeah, yep, they did that right, they did right. They were using like real instrumentation and they knew what they were pushing, and I think that's very valuable too.
Yeah, I think it speaks to Hank's quality as an actor. There's one place in the movie where Sully has been waiting for the count of the number of people rescued, because as a domestic flight, there's no flight manifest, there's no list of the people on board the plane, but they know the count, and the count was famously 155 people,
right?
That's
including the crew,
the two pilots and the flight attendants, and then all the passengers, and for a good 20 minutes of the movie, it is Sully waiting with a great intensity for
that
the final count. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when they deliver that number to him, it really emphasized to me why Tom Hanks is such a great actor, because he portrays so much intensity and depth when that number is delivered to him, the relief is palpable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things that had fascinated.
I'm sorry. Palpable.
One of the things that I really got into when watching the documentaries, when they interviewed all these people, was the interviews they did with the air traffic controller and how, what it was like for him, you know, to stay on task and to try and direct the, and when they interviewed him, he kept talking about how he, when the pilot suggested that they were going to go in the Hudson, he was like, no, I've got to get them to a runway. And he was trying, you know, kept offering them runways. He's like, can you get to this runway? And he stayed on top of it because in his mind, the only thing he could ever think of was the Ethiopian airline that cartwheeled into the ocean and killed most of the people on board. And in his mind, there was no way to survive a water landing. And he didn't want them going into the Hudson. And they portrayed that in the movie. And I was so happy that they spent time with the air traffic controller. They included him. They showed what happened to him, how he got stuck in a room as soon as, you know, they lost contact with the plane. They took him off controls and stuck him in a room, which is procedure under that situation because he's too emotionally wrought to keep directing traffic. And it's understandable. But then everybody forgot to go and tell him.
You know? He's still sitting in there.
Yeah. And everybody's celebrating and he's still sitting in that room. And they portrayed all of that in the movie. And I also found out that they used some of the actual people, like the first ferry on the scene, the pilot of that ferry. Yeah. He actually played
captain,
him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He played himself.
I thought that was neat. Mm-hmm. And the scuba cops.
Mm-hmm.
They used the same scuba cops and they reenacted exactly what they did, which I thought was a really nice touch.
Yes. Yes. So that, and I think they said that even some of the Red Cross workers, when they show them putting blankets over them as they come off the ferries, they said that even some of them stepped in to reenact their roles. So it was amazing how many people wanted to be involved in this movie and to reenact what a beautiful story it was. So those are, I guess, are my first impressions of the movie overall. There were also some, you know, some general quotes before we kind of get in our thematic study. There were some general quotes that I wanted to share and just do a little bit of discussion about, not go into in-depth stuff because we'll probably run out of time if we did that.
We always run out of time.
We always run out of time. Don't worry about time. Just ignore the clock on this episode. This is the first one.
I'm thinking about running over the press with the car. Self-defense. Do you think a jury would convict?
Okay, so lately, in the last year or two, the press has been taking, the media in general has been taking quite a hit. I thought that this quote was a rather apropos to the way Americans think of the press these days. In context, this is Sully's wife. The press are basically
surrounded the house.
Yeah, put siege on her house, and she can't do anything without running into them and them wanting her to give them information about Sully.
She comments on the generators running all the time, and she can't hear. She can't even have a conversation with her husband because everything is so loud out there.
Right. It's understandable, and I think that is a situation that average Americans hope to never be in. In a situation where the press are suddenly hounding you, as an average American, to be in the spot like that, to be put suddenly in the spotlight with no warning, and through no act of your own, it would be intimidating. So, yeah, that was an interesting quote.
I guess part of me was looking at it like, well, at least they didn't crash and they were surrounding her house for
more macabre reasons.
Yeah. While they were grieving or something.
Mm-hmm.
But still, it's a huge pain in the butt.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're just fulfilling the public's need to know, you know.
Yep.
Part of
our culture.
It's part of our culture. We all want to be involved. We all want to know what's going on. But it's sad that it does destroy the peace and privacy of people when they go through something like that.
Yeah.
It's a shame that our need to know can be so abusive to people. So I guess it's just kind of a reminder to see it from the victim's point of view, I guess, in that instance. The next quote.
Seeking the facts is hardly fishing, Mr. Skiles.
Now, I just, this really jumped out at me. This is during one of the conversations that the investigatory body just kind of popped in, because I think Sully and his first officer were really feeling like they were on a witch hunt, and they were going on a fishing expedition, you know, to try and find something that went wrong somewhere around the way. And their response was, seeking the facts is hardly fishing. And mm-hmm. I thought that, I don't know, it stuck out at me as we always want to talk about facts as being these hard things that you can find and deal with.
Yeah.
But the
committee has a difficult job to do too. But I don't think Sully and
Skiles.
I don't think Sully and Skiles were out of line to think that, you know, they were being targeted. Mm-hmm. When it comes to crashes, something like 80% of crashes by NTSB reckoning are pilot error.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, it's like those crime films. When it's murder, the spouse is always the killer.
Right, right.
They expect to be targeted. So there's going to be an adversarial nature.
Mm-hmm. In any investigation, right.
When Skiles said something, while he made his fishing comment,
mm-hmm.
I felt a little sorry for Charles Porter.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who was heading up the investigation.
Right.
But as the movie went on, I think he was coming across as more and more of a jerk.
Right.
And all the way up until the very end.
Right. And I really felt like Sully understood he almost left it to Skiles to be defensive. He wasn't as defensive, I think, in his encounters with NTSB. In fact, earlier on in the movie, he actually made the point of saying,
it's not personal. NTSB is just doing its job. Once they have all the facts, it'll calm down.
So, yeah, I really feel like Sully had the proper perspective on what was going on.
Sully is he was a safety expert.
Mm-hmm.
So he must have done a lot of work with the men and women at the NTSB in his professional capacity by that point.
In fact, they even said at one point, we're not going to think about all the other instances that we've interacted with you. that's you know, not part of this picture.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, I think the familiarity probably helped him maintain a more even keel.
Mm-hmm.
And Skiles was definitely the more emotional of the two, but he was also the funnier of the two.
Right.
Hands down.
Yeah. 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 And he made good points. I mean, it wasn't that he was just being defensive. He was making points that were necessary.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, his input was very good. Speaking of him, the next quote is also his quote.
You enjoying the shakes? The nightmares? Rabbit heartbeat?
A little bit.
What I found interesting about this conversation between Sully and Skiles, they went out for a walk in the middle of the night, was that they were sharing in, I guess, the post-traumatic trauma that they were both going through. The nightmares, which we were introduced to at the beginning of the movie, was Sully's not able to sleep because every time he closes his eyes, he thinks of how it could have happened. And
right.
You really get a sense that in that thinking of what it could have happened was his anguish over the fact that this happened over a populated area, a densely populated area, and that
the most densely populated area.
Yeah. And he didn't have a lot of choices as to where to safely land the plane, because if he tried to make it back to a runway and he, you know, made the wrong choice, he would end up crashing into buildings. And that's what his flashbacks and his nightmares were all about, crashing that plane into buildings and killing a lot of people. It wasn't just about the people on the airplane. He was thinking about the people underneath the airplane.
Yeah.
And I think that really added to the trauma for him.
Yeah, they mention it once or twice in the movie. I think only once in the movie, but it's actually mentioned a couple times in the extras. The fact that Sully said his resting heartbeat was 55.
Yeah.
And I want to say it was for weeks afterwards, his resting heartbeat was in
over 100.
Was in or around 100.
Right.
So, I mean, it really does speak to the amount of stress that even surviving
mm-hmm.
such a incredible situation can put on even the best of people.
Right.
So I think the shakes are probably part of the healing process and perfectly acceptable at this point.
Right, right. And we understand our vets who return from war have PTSD, and we often forget that people who are in any other traumatic instances like this one, or even just being in a car wreck, it causes flashbacks, it causes anxiety. That PTSD is not just for our military vets. Other people have it too. Mm-hmm. And so, to me, this just reminded us to have some compassion for people who've gone through something like that. It's something they're going to live over and over and over again, probably for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
It's just, our hats off that they were able to stay in the moment and do what they needed to do at the time. And they anguished over the other choices and the other things that could have happened after the fact.
Yeah.
The next one is probably the most famous line from the movie. It appeared in the trailer, and it appeared, I think, probably in multiple places outside of the movie as well.
I've delivered 1 million passengers over 40 years in the air. But in the end, I'm going to be judged on 208 seconds.
That is right. I mean, the whole point of this movie was how people were looking at Sully after the accident, because really this movie takes place the day after and beyond that day. And he has gone down in history for what happened in that 208 seconds.
He's Hero Pilot USA.
Yeah.
For our listeners, see in the extras, it says that they actually received mail with no address on it except for the words Hero Pilot, USA. And this is from mail from Europe.
Uh-huh. And it would get to him.
Yeah. So the movie really is, as much as it is about the crash in the Hudson, it may
landing
even more exactly. Good point.
Sully would never let anybody call it a crash. He said, "I landed that plane."
The movie really does focus a lot on what makes him a hero.
Right. And you know what's interesting about that is that the movie is called Sully. The movie is not called Miracle on the Hudson or Landing on the Hudson or any of the other many ways that this incident was referred to in the press and the media. It's called Sully because the movie is about him, not about what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel like that he will be remembered. In fact, one of the documentaries I watched, they were saying that he had to quit flying because every time he would take a flight, yeah, people would mob him whenever they saw him, and it would delay the flights that he piloted. So he had to quit flying because of this. Not because he couldn't fly anymore, but because he was so popular and people knew him, he couldn't go anywhere near an airplane without being mobbed by people. And so he had to quit flying, and that was kind of sad to think of, that his popularity keeps him from flying. And that's tough on any pilot.
Yeah.
But I think that's a really good transition to go into our first discussion on the thematic discussion.
Okay. So the question is, the movie is about Sully.
Mm-hmm.
And the question becomes, is Sully a hero? And what is our modern definition of a hero?
Mm-hmm.
So to sort of kick us off, I looked up the Merriam-Webster definition of a hero, and the first two have to do with mythology and all that. Clearly, they don't apply.
Right.
So definition 1C is a person admired for achievements and for noble qualities, and 1D is one who shows great courage. So 1D is in my mind, it's sort of like the military definition of a hero, the recipient of the Medal of Honor who throws himself on the grenade, or
yeah,
or even though they are a conscientious objector, runs out and rescues people on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Why don't we go play a quote?
I don't feel like a hero. I'm just a man who was doing his job.
Yeah, this is clearly Sully showed great courage.
Mm-hmm.
But so did it. So did Skiles,
mm-hmm,
and so did the rest of the flight crew.
Right.
So in that sense, they are all heroes.
Right. They did their job. They stuck with it. They didn't give up. They did their job. They stayed in control of the situation. I mean, there are, probably aren't too many pilots out there who aren't going to go a little panicky at the idea of losing all of your engines at once on takeoff. I mean, you don't have the altitude to make a lot of decisions at that point.
It's a good thing I'm not a pilot, because I wouldn't be panicky. I'd probably be wetting myself.
Yeah.
So what makes Sully a hero in beyond showing great courage really is the qualities that he showed
under fire
and in the aftermath.
Right.
Not just in the cockpit during the event, but from there on. And that's what a lot of the movie is about.
Right. And I appreciate the fact that they break that activity up throughout the movie. They're all done as flashbacks. And the way that the movie tells the story is we see him flashback to the instance in what happens in the cockpit after the bird strike. He flashes back when he's talking to his wife, and he goes through it again in his mind. Okay, you know, what happened? What could I have made any other decisions? And then the aftermath after the plane hit the water was a flashback while he was sitting in the bar, and they were talking about how much time he had. And he thinks about all the instances that happened then. So they kind of break up the action. So you're not seeing it in sequence. I was really impressed with the fact that as soon as they hit the water, both pilots immediately went back and started to help the evacuation.
Yeah.
And the fact that everybody kind of was just sitting there, like they landed on the water, everybody was expecting to die. And so when they landed in the water and the plane kind of bobs there, it's starting to sink, but it's a slow sink. Everybody's kind of like sitting in their seats going, what do we do now? We weren't expecting to still be alive.
Yeah. Just for the record, I don't think a slow sink really makes that much difference to the people.
Yeah.
The people who are thinking, ah, the plane is sinking. The plane is sinking. Yeah. Why is the plane even in the water?
Why aren't we dead?
Yeah.
I really feel like, cause when you watch the interviews with the passengers, a lot of them said that. It's like, we hit the water. We were really expecting to die. Mm-hmm. And so there was that instant of, wait a minute, we didn't die in the crash. Now what?
So the reason that they didn't die, or a good portion of the reason, is that Sullenberger was a perfectionist, or is a perfectionist at his job.
Right.
He did his job well. And he did his job well, but by everything I can tell, he did his job well regardless of if the circumstances were incredible, like the bird strike and the landing in the Hudson, or mundane, like the other 40 years that he flew.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of quotes. There's one point where he is just learning to fly a crop dusting biplane, or a biplane that belongs to a crop duster, and this is what the instructor says.
Pilot never stops acquiring knowledge. You'll make mistakes. Everyone does. Just learn from them.
Yes, sir.
And never forget, no matter what's happening, to fly the airplane.
Absolutely, sir.
And I really think that sets a nice foundation for what Sully is all about, and he's all about being a pilot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the flashbacks in his past really show the fact that he is a man dedicated to flying, and he respects the aircraft that he's flying as well. Mm-hmm. Because the second flashback we see is him as a military pilot, and he could have abandoned the plane. He had flight instrumentation failure. He could have abandoned. They could have just ejected, because it was a plane.
The navigator actually asked, do we need to punch out?
Right. And he flew the plane back. He's like, oh, no, if I have a straight shot at a runway, I can land this thing, you know. And he respected the equipment that he flew. And I really he was always a pilot. He always knew what he was capable of doing in the aircraft that he was in.
Yeah. His attitude did remind me of Colossians 3:23-24. And I know I've used this one before, but whatever you do, work heartily as for the Lord and not for men. Mm-hmm. Knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if Sully is a man of faith or not,
mm-hmm.
but he is definitely a man who takes
a man of integrity.
Specific care. Yeah.
Yeah.
A man of integrity who takes specific care of to do his job well.
Mm-hmm.
And that really stands out in the movie and in the additional documentaries and mm-hmm. and extras.
Right.
And of course, part of what leads to him doing his job so well during the crisis is he's been doing it 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time.
He used his experience to make decisions that they didn't have time. One of the things I felt was very interesting, and they brought it out in the movie a little bit, but it was really more in the documentaries, was how many of these emergency, they have like this emergency procedure book they're supposed to pull out, you know, so in case of, you know, failure of both engines, here are the things you're supposed to do. Well, all of those instances were always based on having the, you know, flight altitude. They had just taken mm-hmm. off. They didn't have flight altitude. So there was 3 pages of things they were supposed to do. And one of the last things in those pages, I think it was actually on page 2, was they were supposed to turn on the auxiliary power. And it was like, you know, further down the list. But because of his experience, he knew that once they lost the engines, they were going to lose power, because the power for all the systems comes from the engines. And if they aren't able to restart the engines, he needs to go to the backup power so that he can continue to use the rest of the flight instrumentation. And so he just automatically turns that on. I've lost both engines, flip it on. And that wasn't even until page 2.
Yes, Skiles says at one point that it's actually step 15,
mm-hmm.
but the fact that he turned it on so early, and I don't understand how this part works, but the APU apparently takes a while to ramp up or to power mm-hmm. up or something.
Right.
But it saved them. It saved the entire plane
right.
by them doing that. I wonder if it provided power for like flaps and control mm-hmm. surfaces
yes.
or something.
Yes, it controls all of those things that are normally powered by the engines. It was a backup battery unit that's actually in the tail of the plane, from what I understand, reading all of the documentation that I read for this. But yeah, it takes a while to warm up and get and actually shunt the power over. And if he hadn't turned it on when he did, they would not have been able to control the plane. So it would not have been a controlled descent. They would have actually crashed instead of landed. Mm-hmm. And the main issue with that was he may have been able to still manage to hit the Hudson, but he probably would have hit the bridge, because they had to fly over a bridge before they landed in the water.
George Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And that was, without control of the plane, he probably would not have missed the bridge. So they probably would have taken the bridge out. By that point, he'd already kind of made the decision that he wasn't going to be able to turn back into the city and make for the runways. And I really feel like it was his experience and his knowledge of the way the plane worked
mm-hmm.
that, you know, if any other pilot had just been following the rules, as Skiles points out later, if he'd followed the rules, we would have been dead.
Yeah, and that actually comes up in the interview that frames the first half of the movie, the investigation, where the main investigator says, "Sis."
Okay, well, let's get into how you calculated all those parameters.
There was no time for calculating. I had to rely on my experience of managing the altitude and speed of thousands of flights over 4 decades.
You're saying you didn't do anything?
I eyeballed it.
You eyeballed it?
Yes.
Yeah, that's fascinating, you know, that he just goes ahead and admits that he used his experience to make the decisions, that he didn't have time to make calculations. They did not have enough time.
You know, on my first viewing of the movie, when Skiles says something about, I know he wasn't following the procedure because I had the procedure right in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I was thinking, you know, maybe they were setting up a conflict between the first officer and the pilot. But then because that procedure was about the auxiliary power unit.
Mm-hmm.
But it was clear that it becomes clear that it was that break in procedure that, in conjunction with many other things, contributed to the successful landing of the plane in the Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the experience that leads up to that. And as I grow older, this becomes more and more a favorite of mine, for scripture. And that's Proverbs 29:9. The glory of young men is their strength, but the splendor of old men is their gray hair.
Which basically means their experience. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, we have to admire the experience that comes from doing something over and over and over and over again and really knowing what they're doing. The fact that he immediately took over the plane, because Skiles was actually flying the plane when the bird struck.
Yep.
And Sully knew immediately that he needed to be the one in control of the plane. So he took over the plane and let Skiles go through, you know, the emergency stuff while he just flew the plane, because somebody needed to be flying the plane. And that was what his instructor had taught him when he was an early student of flying, that you fly the plane. And that was what saved them, because he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, the teamwork between Sully and Skiles and the flight crew as a whole, I think, really was highlighted nicely in the movie.
They also highlighted the fact that they weren't necessarily a team that had been together long, because Skiles had, when they go back in time a little bit and show like them preparing the plane for takeoff.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Skiles made the comment, "I googled you, found your website, you know," and that was something that came out a lot in the interviews and in the documentaries. Was, you know, most pilots don't fly together on a regular basis. That this was not a well-oiled team, and the fact that they'd flown together, this was, mm-hmm. I think, only the second time they'd been in the air together. They were on a return flight. The flight to New York, Sully had flown. And Skiles was going to fly the flight back. And so
they were going to Charlotte?
Yes. Yes. Which was Sully's home. So that was why his wife was at long distance, because he was flying home on that flight.
Oh, that I had actually put in my notes, why is a pilot of 40 years flying regional jet? Because I worked IT in the airline industry, mm-hmm. Telford Aviation up in Maine. And I always had gotten the impression that regional jet piloting was for the inexperienced pilots, and that you would actually eventually move up to larger, longer flights.
Mm-hmm.
And here's this expert pilot flying a regional jet.
Yeah,
exactly. But the fact that it was his home run makes all the difference, particularly when you consider how important family is
mm-hmm.
to Sully, and it comes out in the
movie. Yes, and yes, and I believe their two daughters were adopted. But that
it said so. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, it's family was extremely important to him, and that was when he first called his wife from the ferry. He called his wife, and she said, "Oh, are you on your way? Are you still on the 540, which is when the flight would have arrived?" And then he was like, just calling to let you know I'm safe, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, he was on his way home on that flight.
Yeah, that was actually the first thing he did as soon as he was able.
Mm-hmm.
He went to the top deck. He looked at the plane, did a quick assessment, pulled out his phone, and called his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't the only time where it was clear that his wife and family were at the forefront of his mind.
Even when he was still worried about the 155 on the plane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really appreciated that, you know, it was so important to him to make sure his wife and family didn't worry needlessly and that they mm-hmm. were getting everything that they needed.
Yes.
One last comment on Sully being a hero is that, you know, they say the best leaders are not people who seek leadership, but people who have leadership thrust upon them.
Mm-hmm.
It was clear the way that, not only in the way that Hanks played Sullenberger, but also the way Sullenberger speaks in the extras and everything, that he was not a glory hound. He really did not want the attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciated that as well.
Mm-hmm.
I really felt like I could connect with him much more, knowing that he wasn't out there saying, yeah, I saved those 154 other people.
Yeah.
And it did remind me of Proverbs 25:27. It is not good to eat much honey, nor is it glorious to seek one's own glory.
Yeah.
And the humility that he shows even to this day, apparently.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's, I know that we had briefly talked the other day, shortly after I had gotten the movie. There was an article ran in my local paper that Sully was in Norfolk, not 15 minutes from my house, in a speaking engagement. But when I went to check the tickets, they were already all sold out. Mm-hmm. I hate it when they put it in the paper and it's already sold out. You're like, oh, you're not recording on an event. You're recording on something I'm missing.
Right, right. And it, just to make a note, one of the reasons why I decided to do this movie this month is this is actually the anniversary that the crash happened in January. I think it was January 15th. And so this was an anniversary of the crash this month. And I thought it wouldn't be kind of correct in doing our episode in January if we actually managed to get this posted in January. We're going to do our best.
You know, that actually, let me jump back to Skiles' sense of humor real quick, and we'll wrap up the hero section with his quote.
First Officer Skiles, is there anything you'd like to add? Anything you would have done differently if you had to do it again?
Yes, I would have done it in July.
Yeah. And
I love that.
Yeah. And if that was the last line of the movie, I was like, that is the best way they possibly could have ended the movie, because the water was so cold. There was ice floating in the river. This was how cold it was. And I mean, if you were going to crash land a plane in the Hudson River, let's choose to do it in a warmer season.
What's the temperature of the Hudson River right now?
Well, they said in I can't remember what it was in the movie, but they said in some of the documentaries that it was just above freezing. So it would have been like 32, 33 degrees. So it was a very cold river. I would not have wanted to gone swimming in it. So
no.
and that was one of the interesting things you had pointed out about the man who jumped out of the front exit. And they showed it in the movie that he got to it and the ramp did not deploy. The ramp life raft did not deploy. And he was the first one to the door and the flight attendant just told him, jump. And so he was like, and I think he was one of the first, he was the first class passenger in the first row. So he was only two steps from that door. And when they interviewed him, he says, I was two steps from an exit. I got there and all I could see was water. And the flight attendant said, jump. And so I jumped because what else was I going to do? And he ended up in that frigid water. And he said he knew as soon as he hit that water that he had only seconds to figure out what to do. Because when you hit water that cold, he knew that hypothermia was going to shut him down. And he had to figure out what to do fast. And thankfully, the raft did then deploy and they were able to pull him into it. But he was very cold.
I can't imagine being in water that cold.
Yeah, he had actually thought about trying to swim for shore. He said he could see it, and he actually took off swimming, and he realized there was no way he could make it, so he turned around and went back to the plane, which was the smartest thing to have done.
For the record, the temperature right now in the Hudson River, as of this recording, 33 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cold.
That's cold. And he didn't think to grab a flotation device. So he went into the water without a life jacket or.
Yeah, he was just swimming.
Yeah.
I don't think he got a flotation device until people were in the floating, you know, the ramp, the floating ramp, the inflatable thing.
Yeah. The other interesting thing about that was that when it did deploy, when they filmed that scene, they were actually filming it. I think they filmed most of this in the summer. So even like the outdoor scenes where it shows Sully and Skiles running around in New York, they actually filmed that in the summer. So they had coats and stuff on and they were too hot instead of too cold. But when they filmed that scene where the pilots get down into the raft and then detach it, they had been given no training on how to detach that. And so they had, they were like scrambling, trying to figure out how do you even disconnect this from the plane? Cause they had no clue how. And the day they filmed that, they actually filmed that in that tank at the studios, that part. Sully was on set And so they, Tom Hanks said he went up to him afterwards and apologized for how long. He's like, we had no clue how to disconnect that. And he says, what, did you think I knew how to disconnect it?
Yeah.
So it made it more realistic that they had to figure out how to do it because Sully didn't know how to do it either.
I like how that scene came out, too.
Yeah, yeah. And they shortened it in the movie. But yeah, it was definitely a struggle for them to figure out, how do I disconnect this thing from the plane? The final thing that I kind of wanted to talk about, this is, and I even did it at the beginning of this episode, this event is often referred to as the Miracle on the Hudson. And in the movie, it's actually referred to as a miracle. Let's play that quote.
I guess you haven't heard. He landed the son of a...
What?
Everyone's been pulled off. It's a miracle.
Yeah, that was an unknown to us at the time of the movie, at least, talking to the air traffic controller who was still convinced at that point that he had lost the entire flight.
Right. And they were claiming right then that this is a miracle, that everybody got off the plane, that he landed it. And it's interesting to me that when people talk about this, they keep saying that it was a miracle. I would beg to differ with that, because miracle is an act of God. And I really feel like this was the providence of God. The providence of God in putting a man behind the controls who knew what he was doing and could make the right decision in a split second. And that's providence. That's not a miracle. I think God's hand was in it. I would say to not say that God's hand was in it would be a fallacy, because God's hand is in everything. He's sovereign. But to call this a miracle would be stretching it quite a bit.
It's my understanding of how we as evangelical Christians should differentiate between miracles and providence is that everything works towards the glory of God. We know that from Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
All things work to the glory of God and those who are called according to His purpose. Right. Romans 8:28, I think. But and you actually commented on this in our earlier discussion before we started recording. Miracles really need to call specific attention to God as the only source of the event.
Right. It has to be outside of the outside of the natural law. Yeah.
And in the case of this flight landing on the Hudson, everything was in perfect place for this to happen exactly as it did.
Mm-hmm.
The right man in the right place with the right conditions. And I think it was, in my mind, clearly providential.
Mm-hmm.
And not miraculous.
Right. And it's interesting because we tend to think of bad things occurring as somehow, you know, if you escape an earthquake, or you were one of the people who was supposed to be in the towers on 9/11, but for some reason you weren't there. You tend to think of that as being some kind of miraculous thing that you survived. And I think that's mm-hmm. why people call it a miracle, because they survived it. You know, that people walked out of this, they survived it. There were only slight injuries. I think the worst injury was to one of the flight attendants who hurt her leg during the crash, or during the landing.
Yeah, it wasn't a crash.
It wasn't a crash. This just a few scriptures kind of came to mind. One of them was when we talk about who sinned, you know, that some people die and some people don't die. Was that because of sin in their life? Well, Jesus answered that question. This comes up in a discussion in the book of Luke. It says, there were some present at that very time who told him about the Galileans whose blood Pilate had mingled with their sacrifices. So Pilate had slaughtered a bunch of Jews. He says, and he answered them, do you think that these Galileans were worse sinners than all the other Galileans because they suffered in this way? No, I tell you, but unless you repent, you will all likewise perish. Or those 18 on whom the tower in Siloam fell and killed them, do you think that they were worse offenders than all the others who lived in Jerusalem? No, I tell you, but unless you repent, you all will likewise perish. That is Luke 13:1-5. The reason I bring that up is a lot of times we take this instance as, well, maybe the people who survived were better than the people who died. You know, maybe there was some reason that God chose them to die. And that is the absolute wrong perspective to take. That the people who die in horrific circumstances, like on 9/11, or even the Ethiopian crash that pinwheeled when it tried to make a water landing, God doesn't judge people because some are more sinners than others. That's not the way that he chooses who will survive and who will die. We all will eventually die. We will all eventually face judgment. And we have to remember that God's providence is based on our need for salvation, not on how much we sin, because we all sin. We all fall short.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. It's as a corollary, I think back to when Hurricane Katrina hit, mm-hmm. There was talk about it being punishment from God for
the sins. Yeah.
The sins. Yeah. I don't know if it was the sins of the people of New Orleans or the sins of the people of the United States or what have you. But personally, that kind of talk always bugs me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, when a hurricane hits or somebody contracts cancer or any of the malfunctions of this world, they are all a result of sin, but they're not a result of, you know, stealing a pen from the office or, you know, mm-hmm. taking somebody's stapler or something like that. They're a result of sin being part of creation.
Right.
Now.
Yeah. Yeah. The marring of God's perfect world by the existence of sin. It's not particular sins. It's the existence of sin.
Mm-hmm.
We live in a marred creation. And one of the quotes that Sully made, even in context, it really struck me. But when you take it out of context, it's just a very, a point of wisdom. They commented that his landing was unprecedented. You know, that the fact that he lost both engines on takeoff was an unprecedented thing.
Mm.
And this is what he said.
That would be unprecedented.
Well, everything is unprecedented until it happens for the first time.
And that really stunned me, because what he was saying is that you can't base everything that happens on something that happened before. You can't. You have to take each event as it happens for the reasons that it happened, and not declare whether or not, you know, well, that couldn't have happened because it's never happened before.
Yeah.
You know, there's a little bit of
that'd be a boring existence, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And I really felt like this movie exemplified the lesson that Esther learned in the Book of Esther. And I love to come back to her, because God put her into a position of power at a time when he needed somebody to do something. And when she finds out about a plot to kill her people, and she runs to the only person in her life that she knows that can give her points of wisdom, her uncle Mordecai. And in Esther 4:13-14, Mordecai tells Esther, "Do not think to yourself that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silent at the time, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another place." I love that point of wisdom. "But you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this." It's like one of the most popular phrases from the Book of Esther is, who knows that you did not come to be there for just such a time as this? And the fact that Mordecai says, if you stay silent and you don't do anything, God's going to cause deliverance to come from another quarter.
Yeah.
But he put you here to be the object of deliverance. So we are all tools of God, and we have to be open to being used by God in the position that he's placed us when the opportunities arise. We have to be sensitive to God's leading. And I think that whether or not Sully is a man of God, and we really don't know. I mean, from everything that we've looked at, we really have not gotten an impression of where he is from a spiritual standpoint. But God used him. He was a tool in God's hands in this situation. This was an evidence not of a miracle, but God providing the right man at the right time to do the right things, to make the right decision, because God had not appointed any of those people to die that day.
And we need to practice the same. I mean, mm-hmm. when we are put in any position, be it incredible or mundane, we need to do the best we can in accordance with God's will as defined in Scripture. Because mm-hmm. to do anything else would be sinful.
Right. 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 And I think this is an indication that God uses everybody. In Proverbs 16:4, it says, "The Lord has made everything for its purpose, even the wicked for the day of trouble." And that means that his sovereignty isn't just over his own people. And we don't have to be answer I mean, we should answer his call when he tells us to do something. We should be sensitive to his voice and do what he tells us to do. But he doesn't need us to. He can
right.
He can do whatever he wants. He is in control of everything. And I think that that should be a comfort to us, that we, if we miss that opportunity, God's going to do it in another way because he is sovereign.
Amen.
Well, I think that's actually a good point. There's a lot more we could say about this movie, and we probably could do a second episode, but I think we've covered this movie fairly well. And I'd love to hear what other people have to say about this movie, because I hope everybody's had a chance to watch it, because it really is good. If you haven't, go watch it.
Yeah. It's. I don't think it's on any of the on-demand services yet.
Well, the DVD just came out in December, so we are riding the first wave, I guess.
Yay! We're on the forefront. Yay!
So definitely comment on the show notes, which are again areyoujustwatching.com/66. You can call us at 903-231-2221 and leave a voicemail. You could also email us at feedback@areyoujustwatching.com. We do want you to subscribe, rate, and review us in iTunes. We love reviews. Reviews really help, you know, bump up the popularity of the podcast, and we want people to know about us. Share us. When you see what we post on Facebook, share us with your friends so that we get more visibility out there, because we would love to have more people listening to our podcast. We do have a new Facebook discussion group, as I mentioned at the beginning. So look us up on Facebook and join the discussion group. It is a private group. So once you join, all the commentary is staying private. It's not open up to the world to read. You can follow me on Twitter at E. Franklin.
And you can follow me at Renchepele, RenChepele.
Wonderful. So that finishes out our episode on Sully. Do let us know what you think about it. We enjoyed talking about this movie a great deal. And so we hope to hear more from you. I'm E. Franklin.
I'm Tim Martin.
And thanks for listening.
And don't just watch.
Are You Just Watching is a proud member of the Noodle Mix Network at noodle.mx. Our opening vocal talent was thanks to Mariah. The theme song is used courtesy of Answers in Genesis. For more great podcasts like this one, visit the Noodle Mix Network at noodle.mx. That's noodle.mx.